Okay, we're going to call the meeting of the Finance and Audit Committee to order.
Trustee Hill.
Present.
Trustee James.
Present.
Trustee Tolliver.
Present.
Trustee Scott.
Present.
Trustee Finney.
Present.
Now we call the roll. Was there a meeting notice?
Yes, it was.
Now let's move to the approval of our previous meeting minutes.
I move that they be approved.
Second.
Trustee Hill.
Yes.
Trustee James.
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Finney.
Yes.
So the first item on our agenda is the financial update.
Good morning.
Excuse me, would you please identify yourself and who's along with you?
Sure. My name is Glenn Meeks, Vice President of Administration and Finance. And with me is Ted Lannan, the Associate Vice President for Administration and Finance, our controller.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I want to start off by talking about our current cash position. There's no great mystery, and everyone knows that the state has not reimbursed us for about 6 or 7 payrolls, so we're behind in that. Looking at our current cash position, we are able to currently make our current payroll and also pay our vendors. However, without the receipt of reimbursement from the state for those past payrolls on a timely basis, we're going to be in pretty bad, our cash position is going to be pretty bad. We're looking at the end of March, based on projections, that we're going to end up with a cash deficit if everything hits the way it should.
How much?
We're going to be in a deficit of approximately $400,000 cash position. Now, there are some things that that we're looking to do in order to address that. I put a call into the state to find out when we were going to receive our next reimbursement, and of course they went into the how bad the state is currently, and that they would see what they would do for us this week. Good news, we did receive some funds from the university, which is not really public knowledge, but we did receive some funding, so we were able to do that. We're also in the process of trying to acquire the federal stimulus dollars that were promised to the state. We're currently putting together the data and filling out the necessary documentation in order to receive that. We hope to receive the federal stimulus dollars, which is about $3.5 million. We plan on receiving that sometime mid-March this month. That comes in. If that comes in, that helps us. That helps our situation. But in order to continue to meet payrolls and pay our vendors, we have to continuously be reimbursed by the state from now until the end of the fiscal year.
I'm not clear. You mentioned the current projected deficit. Then you said the good news is we got money from the university.
I'm sorry.
Not clear what you-
I'm sorry. We received a partial reimbursement from the state for one of our payrolls.
Okay.
I apologize for that.
Trustee, can I ask a question?
Yes.
Madam Chairman, I'd just like to be clear. At this moment, we do not have sufficient operating funds to meet our current payroll and related obligations, am I? And that is due to the fact that the state of Illinois has not fully reimbursed us for prior payrolls.
That is correct. One of the things that we would have to do in order to do that, there are current dollars that we are holding for other things, and we would be forced to use other funds in order to fund our payroll.
That's not what I'm trying to get at. Something more. The optic or the thing that we need to be transparent about with our faculty and administration and support personnel is that we are perilously close to not being able to meet operating expenses, including payroll.
That is correct.
And no matter of shell game, we'll take money from this pot, we'll camouflage that. Am I right?
That is correct.
And we've been told you put in a call, which seems to be a soft call, asking and pleading with the state of Illinois to honor its obligation, which is to make time and payments on our operating budget. Am I right?
That is correct.
And right now, you're looking at a $400,000 cash, not deficit, but cash shortfall. Am I right?
That is correct.
And there are no non-restricted sources to meet that obligation. Am I right?
That is correct.
Thank you.
I have another question. You said you are expecting stimulus funds in the amount of $3.5 million. Are these restricted funds for specific purposes so that they could not in fact be used to cover general operating, payroll, or whatever? Secondly, is it just a matter of receiving a check, or is there a process that you have to go through to get these funds? I've just been, in December, the recipient of stimulus funds for another entity that I had, and because it was so new, the government hadn't even figured out how to make it happen legally. And it really got tied up as they worked out the process. So that's why I'm asking you, is it a passive thing, we're just expecting a check, or are you clear on what the process is for the acquisition of funds, and are they designated restricted funds?
Okay. Your first question, whether or not the stimulus funds are restricted, yes, they are. We've been restricted to use the stimulus dollars just for payroll-related expenses.
Okay, so they can be used for payroll.
Yes, just for payroll-related expenses. And even then, the restriction goes deeper. They cannot be used for any bonuses or any terminal benefits. And then I think there was another restriction that they placed on it as well, that we also have to be able to verify and submit, and because there's a reporting part to this as well, and therein lies the yeoman's work that we have to do in order to get these, because as you mentioned, the requirements that they had, they were still developing the requirements, the reporting requirements, things that we would need in order to get these funds. We have to substantiate each dollar that we receive to ensure that the individuals did in fact work here, and so we have to be able to track that and submit whatever supporting documentation that we have in order to track that these individuals did in fact work here. In addition, we also need to be able to verify that There are no bonuses included, and there is no terminal benefits included in these, in the reimbursement that we're asking for.
Okay, the other question related to that, in my hat as a bank director, where we've gotten TARP funds, and as head of a not-for-profit organization, in both instances, the board of directors had to approve those guidelines. I'm not sure, did we ever do that?
Yes, we did. There was a certification that, that the president was asked to sign, and that's been done. They were requiring all institutions that were receiving federal stimulus dollars to certify to the procedures, and that has been done.
I said the board of directors.
Oh, the board of directors. No, they weren't asking for certifications from the board.
Okay.
That was not a requirement.
Now, you responded to Dr. Finney that you've made a soft request to the state for, to get the dollars in the door. You know, what you've just described is a fairly, you know, I'm not going to, I don't think it's overstating, a crisis situation where we are, we will be out of money.
Yes.
So this is not sort of the time for a soft approach. Maybe we should hear from, you know, our president on, you know, what efforts we're making to try to immediately get dollars through the door, because if you don't have the money to meet your payroll, how exactly are you going to, are you going to pay people?
Yeah, part of the plan that we've also looked at is, of course, you know, to improve our cash position, you know, is to curtail the use of some of the extra help workers that we have. I know that there's talk about the furloughs, but we thought that going the furlough route wasn't advantageous for us. And so we're looking at the extra help positions that we currently have. And we've projected that if we curtail the use of extra help, we can save somewhere close to $1 million between now and the end of the fiscal year, just in extra help dollars.
But between now and the end of the fiscal year is not going to solve the problem of March, which is the month we're in. I mean, you indicated that the imperative position is now.
Yeah, well, there's a number of other things that we're doing as well that could address that issue too, that would come, that would help us. If we were to suspend, to use the, to curtail the use of extra help, also we did not load, or we have not loaded the fourth quarter budget. So then we're not asking people to, so funds that people thought that they would have available to spend, we're not loading the budget, and so we stand to save approximately about $500,000 just by not loading the budget for March 1. But again, that's from now until the end of the year. But the cumulative effect is with this, with curtailing the use of extra help, with suspending or suspending the availability of the fourth quarter budget, we're also curtailing travel. We're also looking at curtailing any non-essential purchases. We're looking at those as well to try to help save dollars in order to improve our cash position as well. So there's a number of items, a number of things that we're doing. We're also looking at workforce planning, and that's going to be discussed a little later on this afternoon, where we're looking at workforce planning. Part of that has to do with the extra help that I mentioned, but there's also, quite frankly, we're just going to have to let some people go. One of the immediate things.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to, because Mr. President, I really think that this needs to be elevated, as Trustee Scott has said. And that is to the degree that you have engaged our collective bargaining units, number one, so that they are fully apprised of the dire situation that we're in right now. And I think I join with Trustee Tolliver. You know, I've been here before running a large not-for-profit company and trying to make payroll and having to borrow from Peter to pay Paul in order to keep up, and then being short to pay Paul back at audit times. And so the real issue gets down to being, should you got to get some room someplace, mm-hmm. and be mindful that any time you go into restricted funds, you're already inviting an audit finding. plain and simple, if you borrow from restricted funds. And so that's troubling. The other thing, of course, is your critical payables, your AP, your critical accounts payable, and where are we with respect to utilities, those things that we've got to have, insurance, health insurance, and casualty insurance, fire. These matters exceed the question of payroll, because any one of them, to lose your, not to be able to get the cooperation of ComEd and People's Energy is a serious challenge for us. Not being able to meet our health insurance premiums and our casualty insurance premiums are critical payables. And so I guess my concern is that, going back to where a trustee, the chair lady, is, this is not a good situation. And I think that we need to elevate it to the critical of the crisis that we're in. And I think that the president, to the degree he can, may need to join in this presentation so that we have a sense of how we're going to, what's the way out. Mr. President?
We, over the last 2 months, I've been involved in a number of conversations with the governor's budget director. And the university presidents throughout the state have organized themselves to put forth a united face in terms of putting leverage on the governor's office. We are potentially $16 to $17 million in the hole if we do not get those dollars. On the outside, University of Illinois is $440 million, and then in between them and us, you have varying degrees of how much each university is really struggling. Each of the 12 universities right now is looking at the question of whether or not they're going to be able to meet payroll March, April, etc. Literally. And we've met with the governor's people, and they're telling us, be patient. We're telling them that this is not a question of patience. This is a question of potentially closing down some colleges. And we've had that conversation with the governor's staff. We've had that conversation with Illinois Board of Higher Education. Had that conversation with some of the leadership of the legislators down in Springfield. I have specifically. And the response, regrettably, has not been one of, the money will be there this week. We've met with our students. We're trying to put together a strategy where we take our students and ourselves down to Springfield and in a very professional way and in an appropriate way, talk with the leadership and appropriate legislators to see what we can do. Because the one-on-one, the discussions that are taking place with the 12 presidents and the governor's staff, at this point we have not gotten the response that we want.
Here's what I think that what's been described here is fairly significant and requires, I think, more time than we have right now in terms of the time that's been set aside for this meeting. And Mr. Meeks has outlined here's a strategy. We cut here, we cut here, we cut here. But I think we need to see something on paper. We need to see a plan for on paper of where we go from here. Being new to the board, I don't know if there's a possibility of us having a call meeting that just is set aside for us to deal with our strategy for maintaining some level of solvency and keeping the doors open, keeping the lights on and the heat going. I just think that this is something that is beyond the time we have set aside here, and I don't know if we are prepared to address it today. But we're getting on the bus and going to Springfield. That's a nice idea, but we just really need to know
yes
the straight answer is, when are we going to see some dollars?
And also, the other part of that is, it's a two-part question. One is surviving today and also surviving tomorrow. Because we're looking at a 10%, 15%, and 20% cut projection for next year. And, you know, how is that going to affect CSU if we cut 10%? How would that affect CSU if we cut 15%, et cetera? And the impact is major. The impact is major.
But I understand that, but what I'm saying is, I think that we need to have a plan developed now, you know,
yes.
that has
yes.
some, you know, some, that really addresses what we could be facing.
I would agree with Trustee Scott. I mean, we all turn on the television and see what's happening at the University of Illinois because they keep putting the word out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's no isolated, I mean, you could go to Springfield, but to think they're going to respond to Chicago State when you got 11 other universities
yeah.
out there in the same boat is not realistic. So the strategy has to be twofold. The one that the presidents are working on collectively, because it will be a collective decision. They're not going to reward one of the 12.
Very true.
But also what Trustee Scott is saying, so we keep it out there in front.
Yes.
This is
yes.
not your burden alone. It's not Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Meek's. It's our collective responsibility. And if we have special meetings and talk about interim operating strategies, everybody's aware of the situation.
Yes. Yes.
Then you can't point fingers.
Yes.
And nobody can say they're surprised.
Yes.
We need to have a real frank discussion on what happens, you know, in the event of, you know, we don't get the dollars we need.
Right.
Absolutely. And
so would that be a call meeting? What kind of a meeting would that
be? A special meeting because
the legal
call meetings. A special meeting of the
yeah.
of the board.
Okay.
Yeah. Did somebody want to, do we need to make a motion for that?
I'm looking down.
And a date that would be.
We can't make a motion.
We just need to kind of agree on a date and then just call a meeting. So there's no motion needed to do that. Okay.
No. Yeah, there's a.
I guess it depends on what, how much time the administration needs to come up with some interim plan that we can look at. Before we have a meeting.
We have put in quite a bit of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we're going down to Springfield on Wednesday for a budget hearing. So we have 90%, 95% of the data together. The strategies we have in place, we've been spending significant amount of time and putting strategies in place to mitigate the impact. So a lot of that is in writing.
Mm-hmm.
We could do this within 48 hours. The reason why I cannot do it in 48 hours, because in 48 hours I would be in Springfield.
Yeah.
But
48 hours, you're what?
I would be in Springfield in 48 hours.
Uh-huh.
But we can do it Thursday morning, Thursday.
I think it would be helpful to do it after you come back from Springfield.
Yeah. We'll be back from Springfield Wednesday night.
No, Doc, you're in Springfield on Thursday.
Oh, is it Thursday?
Yeah.
Lord.
I'm in Springfield Wednesday.
Oh, we leave Wednesday. Okay.
Right.
All right.
That's next
right.
week.
This week.
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. So we leave Wednesday.
Yeah. Well, Monday, you said?
No,
maybe
I'm
Monday
saying.
Would be a good day.
Also, is there, can we also include what possible revenue increasing, you know, things that we can do in the meantime to help increase? Because
we have tuition increase in this.
Well, no, beyond
yeah.
that. Because actually, if we look at that, it'd probably be more of an effective strategy with everybody else
yeah.
raising their tuition. If we were to lower and then accept more students,
not
if
no.
we could possibly.
No,
do
yeah.
more.
No. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, not even talking tuition, I'm right now trying to figure out how Chicago State ever had this. We do not have capacity to have an enrollment. If we have an enrollment increase of more than 1,000 students right now, I believe we're going to have a challenge. You know, I mean.
Okay.
And I see Lori and different faculty and deans saying, you know, I don't know how Chicago State, there's an allegation that at one time in 1992, Chicago State had 10,000 students. I do not believe that. I don't know how that was possible in terms of parking spaces, in terms of classroom spaces. Increasing students means we have to also increase something else on this campus, and that is classroom space. And trustee James, you just made the statement that we didn't have enough space for students to be in classrooms.
Absolutely.
So we have to take a real careful look at that. But we have an immediate problem. We need to meet payroll. We need to keep operation. We need to keep lights on. And on a parallel track, we need to plan how we, what we're going to do with next year's budget.
I think.
So next Monday.
You said most of that is there. We need to hear as part of being fiscally responsible as a board.
Okay.
You certainly don't have to set the meeting around my availability. I'm out of town the 13th to the 19th of March. But if you need to meet next week, meet.
I think that we want to make sure that we have as many board members who are available to attend so we can.
And after the 19th, that next week, I'm fine.
Thirteenth is?
Saturday, this Saturday.
So you leave Thursday?
I leave this Saturday, the 13th. I come back on Friday, the 19th.
And, you know, I greatly value, and I cannot speak for the board, I can only speak as president, I greatly value your presence in terms of the continuity and knowledge. And, you know.
So that next Tuesday, I can.
No, I'm looking at Friday.
How about the 23rd of?
The 20.
3rd of March, that will give you time to.
Is that a Tuesday?
23rd of March?
Yeah. What day is that, Tuesday?
Yes, Tuesday.
I could meet then.
Okay.
That'll give us 2 weeks to work with the financial people.
Okay, all right.
Take a real.
Next Tuesday.
Not next Tuesday.
No.
I mean, Tuesday after that.
2 weeks from Tuesday.
Okay.
2 weeks from Tuesday at.
23rd.
What time would be convenient?
9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I was in the know.
We don't need to vote on this because it said we have to have three votes.
No.
No? Okay.
Okay. There's no other discussions concerning the cash position, and we'll be meeting on the 23rd of March. I'll go to the next topic. I wanted to also mention something about the recent audit. We just completed our FY09 audit, and later the internal auditor, John Meehan, will go into more detail concerning that. I just want to mention that the FY08, compared to the FY08 audit, we had 21 major findings. This audit, we have 13, reduction of 13%, but there were also, of the 13, there were 7 repeat findings for this audit. We've already put together our corrective action plan in draft form. We will be receiving, we received a draft audit of the, a draft of the final audit. The final audit will probably be here within the next week or two. And we've already begun putting together the corrective action plan for the audit findings that are in question for FY09 on a going forward basis. The corrective action plan includes procedures where we are identifying individuals that will be responsible for addressing some of the audit issues for FY09. But again, John Meehan will probably go into more detail when he gives his report. Now, at this point, I want to move to the action items. Do I? Okay. First action item I want to move to is the, we're proposing an increase in the tuition for effective fall of this year, 2010, which is FY11. We're proposing an 8% increase. Some of the details within your audit package. I think we should have provided you with an updated resolution with the supporting documentation that we provided to you that was not in your original books that you probably received a couple of weeks ago. So hopefully everyone has the updated version. Okay, good. The 8% increase that we're looking at would generate approximately $1.9 million. I do want to mention here that we're only asking for a tuition increase, not an increase in fees. Earlier this year, as you know, we've increased athletic fees, and a little later on, I'll talk about another resolution that will affect fees as well, and that's the UPass. But we're only asking for an 8% increase in tuition fees. There is a tuition and fee committee that we met a couple of times, and the recommendation from the committee was that we institute an 8% increase. Some of the supporting documentation that you see in front of you, some of the exhibits that we use in coming up with that determination, we looked at in Exhibit A, we just calculated out what the total effect would be. And we're only, the increase, as you know, because of the Truth in Tuition Act, only affects incoming freshmen and graduate students. Exhibit B basically just shows where we rank in terms of tuition with the other state institutions. We're right in the middle currently. We also showed fees. We're sort of down at the bottom, third from the last. And when we combine the two, we're looking at, we're still third from the last in terms of tuition and fees compared to the other institutions. Yes, sir.
Just when you said the full time, is that including 15 or 12 hours?
That should be, that's 15? 15.
Okay.
Exhibit C just shows a weighted average. It just looks at tuition and fees. For all public institutions, and we're just showing basically where we rank in terms of the average. We trace back from 1996 all the way to 2010. The average tuition was 10,442. Represented a 10.5 increase over the previous year. And if you look at us for tuition and fees, ours represents about 7.8%. The last time we had a tuition increase was last year, and it was about 8.9%. The year before that, it was about 9.1. So we also took a poll of some of the institutions within the state to find out where they were in terms of tuition increases. We contacted many of the state institutions. Some were willing to share with us, some were not. The University of Illinois is probably the one that proposing the largest increase. They told us when we first contacted them last week it would be anywhere from 9 to 20% increase. And it looks like they may be toward the upper end. I had heard an unconfirmed report that they had set their increase at about 18%. Governor State University indicated that they may go somewhere between 8 and 10% increase, and that they have a separate budget planning committee that recommended a 9% increase at Governor State. Northern Illinois was looking at an increase of somewhere around 11%. And I'm sorry, that's Northeastern. Northern Illinois was seeing somewhere between 5% and 7%. And most of this was the information that we had. We were trying to reach people after the announcement of the Senate bill that was proposing a 10% reduction in general revenue funds. And we were unable to we wanted to see whether or not that announcement would change their tuition and projections. So we weren't able to, at this time, we weren't able to contact, you know, that many of the institutions in order to get a reply or get a response.
You said that you were developing scenarios based on a 10%, a 15%, a 20% decrease in the budget for next year. How does...
That is correct.
How does this meet, does this account for 10% or 20%, or how is this, or is this based on steady state?
This is based on the data that you see before you. That's what basically this is based on. We also looked at the 10% and the 15% and the 20%, and the analysis that we did for the tuition increase, as we indicated, would generate about a 1.9%, about a $1.9 million increase in revenue dollars. What we have to look at is that that's just revenue, and that we also had to take in consideration our collection efforts to see whether or not we're going to realize the entire $1.9 million increase. So to better answer your question, that was one of the factors that we looked at in addressing the budget shortfall of a 10% increase, if we were to receive that. That's in the formula as well.
The university, 10, 15, 20%, once we start reaching into 15 and 20%, to meet that type of reduction, we literally are touching programs. It then becomes very draconian, all right? And we then start getting to the mission of the university. The goal is to protect the mission. We're here to educate, we're here to teach. And when the state spoke with us about a month and a half ago, they asked us to pull together a budget of 30% reduction. The president's, we were all on the conference phone and we just said, no, we're not gonna do it. And the state came back at us, no, we want a 30%. And we said, we are not going to give you a 30%. We just refuse to. And we have all stood strong on that. They came down to a 20%, and now we're looking at 10, 15, and 20. If it is 15%, 20%, we're talking about the mission of the university. And we're talking about the state of Illinois sliding backwards a decade in terms of being able to be globally competitive. You know, it's going to be really draconian if this state requires this of its 12 universities. And I think one of the trustee members stated it. It's not just a Chicago State issue. This is all 12 universities. The president at, I won't name the university, but president of one of the universities said that he's looking at the potential of closing down at the end of this month. So it's across the board, and there's no textbook that one can go to for this. We are taking some steps that in closed session I will share with the board.
Mr. President, but we have been notified by the state that we can anticipate with certainty that there will be a reduction in the funding, and it may not be 30, it may not be 20, but it's going to be stiff
for FY11.
Right.
Yes.
And we're looking at the FY11 budget in terms of our tuition increase. Our tuition increase is not going to be able to anywhere come close to closing that gap. So there's almost a certainty that we're not going to be able to meet the current needs of the institution. So, you know, maybe this is another issue that we need to discuss in our meeting.
Yes.
2 weeks from now, because if we're proposing an 8% increase, and at the bottom, the state's going to have a 10% decrease, then we got to.
True.
We have gap.
And there are some measures that we are putting in place to significantly address that gap.
Okay.
And I would like to share that with the board in closed session.
Okay.
Okay?
But see, I don't want to have to come back to the reason I bring this is I don't want to have to come back to the tuition increase issue.
Oh, okay.
It is a significant issue for a student who is contemplating, you know, an education here. How much is it going to cost me?
Mm-hmm.
How much is it going to cost my family? And then we want to have, you know, certainty around that. And so maybe what we are looking at is, as an 8% increase, we ought to be considered 8.5. You know, I don't know what that 0.5 would do. And he's also to be, and Mr. Meeks has also mentioned the fact is, when we put a tuition increase in effect, we also have to kind of back out how much do we really think we're going to collect.
That is correct.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you have a number where you backed that out, where you looked at historical data, and you have a good sense of what we're really going to be able to collect based on.
Yes, we have.
Past collection efforts.
We have.
So does that also included in how that's going to impact the budget?
Yes.
And the 8% would be sufficient to, with the backing out those numbers?
With the other measures that probably the president will discuss during closed sessions, yes, they would help us.
I think related to your comment, having served as a trustee at another HBCU where this perennially came up, the president would always say that these tuition increases really get passed on to the student financial aid package. And so when you talk about the direct dollars coming out of the student and parents' pockets, there's very little direct dollars that come out of the student and parents' pockets in institutions such as this. Mm-hmm. When the overwhelming majority of students are on financial aid, mm-hmm. it gets passed on to the financial aid package and is absorbed somewhere else.
Right.
So that's important to keep in mind.
Yes, it is.
And part of what we have to do, you know, along the lines of what Trustee Tolliver has addressed, we have to have a more robust and comprehensive financial aid package, which includes loans. And I am not a proponent of loans, but the reality is, in today's society, no matter what university you go to, loans are becoming more and more of a reality. And we have got to, join that reality and stop denying the reality.
Exactly.
And build loans, a more robust loan package in. Because what that will do is that will then help our retention. Students are dropping out because they didn't take out a loan, because they didn't even get books. They're dropping out because they didn't take out a loan, because they couldn't, you know. We need to have a more robust. Now, what I do not like, and I want to be clear, I don't like the fact that students graduate with a $30,000, $40,000 loan package. That is absolutely, you know, something that is not appropriate. But if you look at higher education today and the way it's going, I don't know how we as universities are going to be able to stay away from that.
Related to another comment you made, and I realize the issue is tuition increase, but you mentioned that with these cuts beyond a certain level, you compromise the mission of the university. In January, I attended a global competitiveness forum sponsored by, in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, sponsored by the Saudi Arabian Government Investment Authority. And one of the panels featured some leading people in higher education and business. And they talked about the very fact we're struggling with public education across the board in your most elite universities is receiving less funding from public sources.
Mm-hmm.
So the future lies in terms of income generating, developing strategic partnerships, the university, mm-hmm. with businesses that value a major that's important to them.
That's right.
And so that's where they were encouraging institutions of higher education to look for new dollars, you know. And so it gets into to that, what programs here does the corporate business world value enough that they will invest in to ensure that we have employees? And those are the kinds of task forces the leading universities are now putting together to help fill those gaps.
I mean, looking down the road, 5, 10 years, two things. One is, it is a goal, we have to come up with a strategy, but Chicago State needs to think 10 years down the road, be quite honest, not being dependent upon state dollars.
Right, right.
Now, this is a total paradigm change. We're supposed to be one-third, you know, we're supposed to be getting significant dollars from the state. The way the state is going, and the way education is going throughout the United States, we need to really start looking at not having a dependence upon state dollars and building up a second revenue source coming in, which is along the lines of what you're talking about. That's one piece. Second piece is this. Pell grants are right now $5,200. They're getting ready to go up to $5,700, all right, that you can get from the federal government. I'm a very strong proponent, and I've talked with a couple of our student government leaders, you know, of we need to join. There are a couple of entities out here right now pushing for full Pell grant funding. Full meaning where Pell grant covers the entire tuition, room and board, and books for students. Right now, Pell grant is about $72 billion. You know, if you triple that, that would cover the room and board and tuition for all students throughout the United States who are currently enrolled. And it would, you know, be something like $300 billion. And I'm dealing with round figures, but our country, United States, we have got to start looking at a different way of funding. It's not going to come from the state. The federal government's going to have to step in. Other nations are doing it. And full funding is not unusual in other nations throughout this world. You were in Dubai?
Riyadh, Saudi Arabia.
I'm willing to bet in Saudi Arabia that the government pays full tuition for every student. And if I remember right.
But with rigorous competitive exams to get in those places.
And, but
so it cuts out a whole group of people in those countries,
but,
too.
But the other thing that a friend of mine right now is teaching in Iraq, teaching courses in Iraq. Students get full tuition, plus they get a very strong allowance, and their parents get money for their child to go to higher education. The government has said, I'm not going to get down to specifics, but we are not leading the world right now in terms of how we help our students go to school. We need to become much more aggressive. The burden needs to be removed from the student, and the federal government needs to pick it up. The state is not going to pick it up. And we need, 2020, CSU should not be reliant upon any state dollars. If we get them, God bless them. But if we plan our future relying on state dollars, I think it's going to be a mistake. And we have to put strategy, part of what I hear Trustee Scott saying, we need to put some strategies in place to be able to get there in 2020.
Right, that's what I'm saying, that we need to be less reliant starting next year.
So what's the appropriate, do we need, someone need to make a motion or yes. What? I make a motion that we adopt this proposal for an 8% tuition increase.
Is there a second?
Second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee James?
No.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
What am I voting on?
You're voting on
22. Yes.
Let's move to our next agenda item, is the anti-fraud policy.
I'm bringing forward the anti-fraud policy because in the FY09 audit, the auditors pointed out that although we had an anti-fraud policy, it had not been approved by the board. So we took that as an opportunity to go in and look at our current anti-fraud policy and make some modifications and changes to our in our institutional policy manual. And what you see as Exhibit A is the proposed language, is the proposed anti-fraud policy as currently revised.
On page, on the last page of Exhibit A, where it talks about the Office of the Executive Inspector General, it seems, you see what I'm saying? There's a heading.
Yes.
It said Office of Executive Inspector General.
Yes.
There seems to have been a, is that a typo?
Office of Executive Inspector General.
Where it says I could not find the language in the...
Ah?
Yeah.
Ah, apparently there is. That's not the one that's going to be published. Yeah, that should be stricken from there.
So if that language is stricken, is the resolution complete as proposed?
It is complete as proposed. It is complete as proposed with that little blurb deleted, taken out.
So we're striking, I could not find the language?
Yes.
Those words?
Yes.
Are there any questions about the...
We'll have to do a reprint before the...
If someone could go back to the office and do a reprint and bring it back in time for the board meeting to be approved by the board?
Yes, we'll have that for the full board meeting. Yes, we'll have that modified and changed.
Okay. You said that you had taken the occasion to make some changes.
Yes.
Could you highlight whatever changes are in terms of the policy, whether, you know, previous policies that haven't been approved by the board?
Yes, I can. Each one of the changes?
Just
the highlights?
Just highlights. Just the major things that are worth...
One of the major things is in the, under the fraud definition and examples, that category. It would be the last two bullets are modified. In the first bullet, there was it started off any similar or related irregularity, and that was taken out and stricken, and we have intentional violation of the State Purchasing Act, including dishonest or improper reporting of results, selective reporting or omission of conflicting data for deceptive purposes, and then the last bullet was also added, assigning of employees to perform non-employment related tasks by persons in a supervisory or management position. Under the responsibilities heading that follows, the entire paragraph rewritten that starts Chicago State University. So everything under responsibilities has been added. Under reporting fraud, the first paragraph reads employees, students, we added staff. And we also added the last sentence that starts, if the suspected fraudulent activity involves the Chicago State University president, the activity should be reported to both the ethics officer, who is responsible for preparing a report for the Board of Trustees, and then to the chairman of the Board of Trustees. And those are basically the major, some of the major changes. The others were rather relatively minor.
Thank you.
Just edits for the most part. You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Okay. I move it.
I second.
Trustee Hill?
Yes.
Trustee James?
Yes.
Trustee Tolliver?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Finney?
Yes.
The other item on the agenda is the amended UPass policy?
Yes. The amended UPass policy, actually the adoption of the Chicago Transit Authority U-Pass was something that was approved by the board in an earlier session. And there was a, survey that was done by our current students this year, and it was voted by those students to implement the U-Pass that had been passed by the board at an earlier time. So again, we took the opportunity to go in and look at that, and we did receive a contract from the Chicago Transit Authority that's being reviewed currently by legal, and we cranked out the numbers, what they should be. It turned out to be approximately 81 cents per student per day to use the U-Pass, and these numbers are based on that calculation. In addition, we decided to add something that was omitted before because we had heard some of the resistance before regarding the U-Pass, and one of those had to do with full-time students that also park on campus. Why should it was like a double taxation, so to speak, to paraphrase. And so we decided to add the last whereas clause where we indicate that whereas full-time students who are assessed a U-Pass fee who also have a parking assignment will be issued a credit to be applied toward the parking assignment fee to address them.
I would like to acknowledge the SGA. The SGA gave leadership on this. They got probably the largest number of students to respond to a survey in quite some time. And it went up into, I think, 3,000 students have responded. And I think the last time we did a survey was like in the hundreds. So the Student Government Association deserves quite a bit of credit for one, ensuring that we had student participation, and to the extent that this was passed, I think the Student Government Association really played a leadership role on the campus in terms of doing this. So that must be acknowledged and clearly stated.
Let me pose a question, Mr. President. That's a very large participation of the student body. How did it happen?
That was done online.
It was online and
connected
with registration.
And we did some internal marketing. You know, it's internal marketing online, and put it with an event that we knew that they had to be involved in.
Which
the fourth thing, I know it's redundant, student government. With
I'm all right on that, but you know, I've been around in government a long time. Over 50% of anybody do something is a major accomplishment. So I just wanted to know from a community organizer point of view, how did that happen?
You can implement those tactics.
Right. Raven?
So I got it.
Raven? Raven is the president of SGA. Would you want to address this?
Yes, really the way that it was done was the fact that administration came to the student body because we've already assessed, we are the students, so we know how you can really tap into us. And this is a university that's composed of students that we don't necessarily have the time that other university students have. So the fact that everyone has to do online registration, it only made common sense that when you do registration, you have to do a survey of something that you may or may not want. Therefore, no one can say that they weren't represented unless they chose not to be represented in such an important factor of their education. So that's how.
Thank you. Good. Madam Chairman, I recommend with one caveat, and that is we know that we are, at this particular point, have serious cash flow problems, right? And so as I understand it, we'll have to advance half of the amount of money. I guess it's $214,000 that has to be advanced from our cash flow in order to make this happen. But ultimately, the as I understand, the entire $482,000 will be recovered from the students by increasing fees.
That is correct.
So that's the only thing that I just want to make sure that the finance team realizes is that I'm hoping that cash will be available for us in advance at the time that it needs to be advanced.
I have one concern.
Let me just get finished. Am I correct there?
Yes.
Okay, so that's the only caveat. Beyond that, I want to be prepared to move this item for vote.
I have one concern. The clause as to the university having to pay the expense of those who have parking. I am also a student that pays for parking as well and have been since I've been attending here. I'm not really sure that it's on the benefit of the university to still have to front that money and give a clause to all full-time students who have to pay for parking. I don't know if you all really understand what I'm saying, but I'm not sure if that's something that we can really take a risk on. And I'm speaking that as a student and as someone who understands the financial situation that we're in across the board. I don't think that it would really benefit us on a whole to even do that.
Because what Raven is saying, not to speak for Raven, is that the university would then lose revenue if we do that. Now, that is not part of the policy, is it?
He just told me.
Yes. Yes, they would receive a credit.
Okay.
And on top of that, from my understanding from the parking sergeant, is that the monies that are collected through the parking fees have been used to help with meeting the payroll obligations as well. So if that's happening, we definitely don't want to lose that access to revenue.
Then, so are you recommend, so then I guess.
We need to recommend an amendment.
Right, looking at an amendment to the resolution that would take that clause out of the resolution in terms of the reimbursement.
Glenn, you need to get that retyped and brought it back.
I'll have it back this afternoon, I mean, for the full board meeting. I'll take that out.
The other very key thing about the U-Pass that we cannot miss, and that is, this will help us with our retention. The number of students, I know I said it earlier, the number of students that we lose because they cannot come to school, this will really help us with our retention of our students.